Welcome to the Washington Heights Church weekly podcast. We do this to help people feel at home at WHC, where we help people meet and follow Jesus. Thank you for joining us. Well, today on the podcast, we are speaking to one of the voices of what God is doing in the bigger picture of the church. And as we try to help people understand and feel more at home at Washington Heights Church, you know, we like to talk about what's going on here and some of the people who are involved in making that happen. But we also are part of associations and different groups that we participate with, and we've gained a lot of insight and input through that. And today, I want to introduce you to one of those people. One of the organizations, or really associations, that we're a part of is called the Rocky Mountain Church Network. And today, Stan Reeb, who is the director of that, is joining us. Stan, thank you so much for taking some time with us.
It is my privilege. Thank you so much for inviting me in.
You bet. Well, Stan, let's just start off with you. Tell us a little bit about you, where you're from, some of the things you've done up until this point in time.
I am a Colorado boy. I was born and raised in Colorado Springs, and got saved in a church down there in Colorado Springs when both my wife and I, we'd been married a very short time and came to faith in Christ in a church down by Fort Carson, and were engaged with in that ministry there for a number of years, and then felt the call to ministry. We've been married for 47 years. We have three sons and 10 grandchildren. And love the opportunity to spend time with them and be encouraged by them. I've pastored churches in Colorado and Wyoming, been involved in ministry now for 40 years. Wow. And love the church and love to help the church move forward.
And right now you serve as a director of the Rocky Mountain Church Network. Tell us about that role. What does that entail?
So as the director of the Rocky Mountain Church Network, we try to assist churches, help churches advance their mission. And so we work with those churches. Those churches are about 60 churches that are in Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Utah. We have a lonely church just on the other side of the Colorado border in Kansas that's a part of us. And, they're different shapes and sizes, many of them smaller congregations, several of them larger congregations. We are here to help and resource churches and pastors. And over the last several years, really trying to focus on helping them develop leaders to move the church forward and carry out their mission.
And you talked about resourcing churches, and I should let the folks know that you did that here in a very specific way with Washington Heights several years ago. You were part of a team that came to do an evaluation. You want to talk a little bit about that process?
I've done a church, we call them church health assessments, and I've done well over 150 of them throughout the United States. And so part of my role, another subset of my roles, is that I'm the facilitator for a national organization, CB America. And so in that role, I've connected with churches, again, from Maine to California. And so we've done these church health assessments where we go in and survey the congregation, get their input into where the church is. We evaluate a church on systems, health systems, that are needed to carry out a healthy ministry. And in that, we offer some prescriptions. What are some steps that a church can take to move forward? Oftentimes, the church is in a healthy situation, and so we're going to come alongside and just really help them fine-tune their ministry, as it was with Washington Heights. But oftentimes, it's churches that are in decline and struggling to figure out what the next steps that might bring back to them a vitality of ministry. And so what we've seen is churches that embrace those prescriptions and employ them and work them over a period of time continue to see health and growth and vitality in ministry.
And just speaking to that process here firsthand, what you and the team did was very helpful. And, you know, it made some changes to our structure. helped us to make some decisions that, you know, when you're in it, sometimes you don't see it as clearly as somebody who's coming in with fresh eyes. And I think your team really gave some great discernment to some calls we needed to make, some changes in just our structure and even some of the staffing roles and things like that. And I think the long-term outcome of that has been very productive. So thank you for doing that, not just here, but in the bigger picture.
Yeah, that speaks well of your leadership and the leadership of your church and their decision to employ those prescriptions. That's one of the big points that we see is that if leadership supports that and sees the need to bring about change and innovation, that the church health assessments really are the most productive in those kinds of circumstances. So speaks well of the leadership of the church that they're able to employ those things.
Well, yeah, there's a great team here. And believe me, you know, as a pastor, it's not always easy to hear the things that shouldn't be the way that they are. But at the end of the day, it certainly isn't about us, right? There's a much bigger picture playing out.
Yeah, that's a huge aspect. Just exactly what you communicated. A pastor wants to see the best in the ministry. They understand that there may be changes they need to be making. Those are always kind of hard to hear.
Yeah, we know that in theory, but the reality of it when it's specific things, especially that includes you, it's a whole different story many of the times.
Yeah,
but that's okay. That's a growing opportunity. Hey, Stan, let me ask you a picture just of our region. What would you say the state of the region? You mentioned specifically with the Rocky Mountain Church Network, it's the Intermountain West here. What's your assessment of what God is doing?
Wow, the shaken with the COVID-19 pandemic, that's for sure. Prior to this, I think there was a desire to see health and vitality of ministry. We have a lot of churches that we kind of call legacy churches that are wrapped up in historical past that are finding it difficult to make transition to a future type ministry. But this pandemic has really, really shaken us to the point where there's a lot of openness to change going on right now. And I think right now, in particular, I think within the churches, there's just a lot of questions about what does the future hold for us moving ahead. And so, yeah, it's an unsettling time for churches right now. In the most recent past, church planting has been a big focus, and we're just finding that church planting, it's difficult these days, more so now. And we'd love to see more churches planted, but we would love to see more churches planted that are reaching unsaved people. And a lot of times in the church planting movement, it seems just kind of a movement of Christians from one place to another. And our desire would be able to see how can we help plant churches that are reaching unsaved people.
And boy, where we are, you know, if the numbers are right, and I tend to think they are, that 97% of the people in Utah do not have a relationship with the Jesus of the Bible. And boy, if that doesn't just make things self-evident, you know, that people who matter so much to him are facing eternity without him, that causes me to lose some sleep.
Yeah, so I think in that, one of the big challenges is that we kind of maybe have to think a little bit outside of the box in relationship to that. The idea that we plant self-sustaining ministries that pay a full-time pastor, I think that there's going to be a lot more of entrepreneurial, bivocational, smaller types of connections, especially now, that build church on a much more organic and smaller mindset moving ahead. So,
yeah, if nothing else, this pandemic has caused us to rethink the building, right? And just what the church is, and maybe it doesn't even need a building, potentially. Now, in the Rocky Mountains, it helps to have a roof over your head in the winter, but I think maybe the traditional way that we think about that is being evaluated in all the right ways during this time. Of what do we need and why?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have been so programmatically inclined. And at the heart of the gospel, to me is relationship. Hmm. And so bringing people into relationship with Christ and then building relationship together so we manifest Christ in our lives corporately is so, so critical to that. And so, again, it isn't an issue of size. It's an issue of, again, living out the gospel, maturing saints.
Yeah. So if it's more, and maybe I'll use the word, and you can correct me if I'm not interpreting or restating what you just said, but it's more about either health or, you know, the reality of life together with God versus you know, it being about numbers at the end of the day. What is most needed in the church in general, in your opinion? If you could just drop one thing into the church in America or in the region or whatever it might be, what would be that one facet that you think would help us experience more of what you're talking about?
Yeah, and that's a great question. In doing all these church health assessments, there's a real common thread in virtually every church that we engage with, and that is a clarity of identity and the mission or purpose that's born out of that identity. Hmm. What I have found is that oftentimes the identity is not found in what I call an Ephesians 4 model of ministry, of equipping saints to do the work of the ministry for the building up of the body of Christ to the fullness and the stature of Christ. Mm. So when I talk about that, the idea of identity is that incarnational, being Christ in our community, identity that I think is so core to the church. And then understanding then the mission that comes out of that identity. And I say this to churches all the time, but if that is our identity, is we are to be the local manifestation of Christ in a community of people, the town. If that's the case, if Christ were in this community, what would he be doing? Because that is the mission of the church, is to figure out what Christ would be doing.
But in the implications of what you're saying is that from any church, whatever size or kind of building it meets in, the arrows are pointing outward into the community. Fair statement?
Very much so. Very much so. Jesus, again, I always want to note, you know, Jesus didn't have a home. He didn't have a building. He didn't have a pulpit. He went about. So the Great Commission tells us to go. And we think about foreign lands, but we have a huge mission field just right outside the doors of the building. Sometimes we have a mission field within in the building, but we have a huge mission field out there. And so how can we as a church strategize being that incarnational Christ in the community? Mm. And so, yeah.
Now, Stan, I grew up in the church, not in this church where I am, back on the East Coast, and that picture just wasn't a part of what I experienced there. So there can be this contrast, right, that the arrows are pointing inward to the people who are already there. What makes the difference between that inward focus versus the outward focus that you're talking about?
Well, I mean, the root and crude is discipleship. Hmm. I think one of the difficulties for the church is we have couch discipleship in information. And I think, again, from I'm really big on the Ephesians 4 passage. You're going to hear it over and over again.
But, feel free.
Because I think there's just so much in that passage about what is spiritual maturity. Well, it's when we become like Christ. Mm. And I'll never do it alone, so I need other people to manifest the fullness of Christ. And so it's just a big issue for us in the church is we say we're about making disciples, but for the last many years, it's about making disciples who are full of information. I want to encourage churches to be thinking about making disciples who are full of incarnation rather than information. Information is important. I don't want to negate that at all.
But it's not the goal.
But if it doesn't move to transformation of individual lives, then it isn't discipleship. Creating a transformational ministry that ultimately moves people to manifest the love of Christ to those that are about them is just so critical.
Well, Stan, you talked about this being a time where a lot of change is either happening or is on the horizon and just being forced upon us in many ways by this pandemic. So to somebody either in a church that is in the process of changing and all of a sudden it doesn't feel like the church that I knew anymore, or somebody that maybe comes into a church, so somebody shows up here at Washington Heights and it just doesn't, you know, function the way that I'm used to, what kind of a grid would you give folks to think through about, you know, what is this and where's it going and should I be a part of it or not?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the realities is every church isn't for everybody. And so a lot of people, especially with a church background, come with an image of what the church should be and ought to be and that sort of thing. And that's a difficult group of people to integrate into the bigger body life. But I think that's where it becomes so critical for leadership in the church to emphasize mission and vision and clarity to that. I think leadership has to be relentless in communicating, this is who we are, this is why we do what we do, to help us, again, tie back to our identity and our mission and our vision. So, to quote others who have said it before, but mission drifts and vision leaks. And so you just have to continually be communicating, this is what we're about. And you have to recognize the more definitive you declare that, the reality is the more selective, that's not the right word, the more you're going to not be the church for everybody. So if in leadership we make it our goal to be the church that is for everybody, you're not, and so you got to try and please everybody, then you're not going to please anybody. And so mission and vision has to be so central to everything the church does that it just begins to ooze out of the church. This is what we're here. And I think, Roy, you've done a tremendous job. You've done probably one of the best jobs of helping the church keep that outward focus. You've done so many different things through the years to try to connect your church with community. We use you guys as an example all the time of a church that has that outward focus. And so keeping that mission and vision clear is just so essential. And recognizing that we're going to be the church for everybody.
And mission isn't just one thing we do, right? It's in everything that we do. Has to become pervasive.
Absolutely. And the difficulty is for leaders to be relentless, and that means that sometimes you just get tired of communicating it. But you just have to continually remind people. And so the more a church can define those things, and I say actually write them out and declare them. So as you go to job descriptions, ministry descriptions, everything always points back to that mission and vision, especially if that mission and vision is outwardly focused. So trying to pull that all together, most churches don't want to invest the time in that, but it just becomes so critical.
Yeah. I once heard somebody say that by the time you as a leader are sick and tired of talking about the mission, the vision, that's about right in terms of the yeah. organization. It's like, yeah, now you're getting into the sweet spot there. But on the leadership level, it can sound like that's all we talk about.
Yeah, yeah. And the problem is for those who have been in the church a long time, they're always looking for something new and exciting, you know, for the pastor to share out of Scripture type of a thing. And they're the ones who get into that. But they need to understand, again, they're a vital part of helping the church accomplish mission. Vision mm-hmm. as it moves forward. So it isn't about me. It isn't about them. It's about who's far from Christ and how can we bring them into the family of God.
Absolutely. Well, Stan, let me ask you this question. What is the question these days that no one's asking out there? You know, that here we are in very unusual days and it's 2020 and you know, we're trying to be that Jesus in the community. What question is nobody asking out there that we should be asking?
Well, I hate to go back to it, but I'm going to do it anyways. It is the question, if Christ was living in our community, how would he be responding to the pandemic? And Ray, I don't know if you are experiencing this, but I just see there's a building frustration within the Christian community, and it is manifesting itself in anger and blame casting and all of this. And I just think if Christ were living in our communities during this pandemic, he would just be a source of comfort and encouragement, of understanding, of healing grace. And it just doesn't seem like that's the question that's being asked. Is how would Christ respond to a pandemic in our community? Physically, we're here. And then that becomes really so critical for the church moving forward to be thinking about and strategizing. You know, prior to our talking, you were talking about groups going out and just chalking on the sidewalks and at hospitals and that sort of thing. I think that's the message that we need to be sharing. Christ loves people. To quote another person, and you'll know who it is, but when he says, ask the question that rules his life is, what does love require of us? That's the question most churches aren't asking now.
And sounds like you're not saying he would rant on Facebook during these days or politicize this, right?
Exactly. And he probably wouldn't be listening. This probably doesn't go well, but he probably wouldn't be listening to Fox News either. But, and so that's one of the big issues. It's kind of interesting is this whole thing that's fallen out. I've been listening to conversation of the pastors that I've been coaching and spending time with. And when it first came out, it was like, what can we do? We weren't prepared for this, so we're not online. And we see that that's probably the way we're going to be able to connect. So the church, you know, amplified Zoom prophets in the past several years immensely. It was great how the church responded to that. I have a church in the inner city of Denver, they reach the down and out of the community, and they contacted me and said, what can we do? And I said, well, I'll give you a Zoom account, and let me get you going on this. And the pastor's wife, they're both a little bit older and they're not into technology, but she took this on and she took that Zoom thing and she's figured out ways to connect with kids in the inner city of Denver and just spend time reading to them over Zoom. And they meet and they gather and their Zoom meetings are noisy and confusing, but they're all excited about being together in the midst of that. So I was saying, I'm sorry, I got distracted there. So that was the initial thing is how can we connect? So we helped churches figure out how they could use technology to connect. Then the conversation just began to shift ever so subtly. But in just the last week, it's just this whole thing of people being angry, using Facebook, using social media of other sorts to rant as it would be at times, or to raise conspiracy theories and
pass
sort
along
of thing.
Misinformation.
Yes. And so troubling to me, and because I don't think that the church needs to be there. I think the church needs to be at a point of saying, you know, we know a God that's in control of the situation. Yeah. And if it is a conspiracy, God knows. And the church has thrived in the midst of persecution. The church has thrived in the midst of other pandemics. This is not the first pandemic that the church has experienced. And so the church can thrive in that, but it's out of a spirit of humility and of service and of love that the church is going to thrive, not out of anger and blame casting and politicizing and all the other negative things that seem to be going on here. So, yeah.
Well, sure seems like we've been given an opportunity to rethink a whole bunch of things here in this day. And I know you, as well as we, just pray that we would learn what God has for us in this day, and that we come out on the other side of it more like Jesus, right? And rather than the anger and the ranting, more of the fruit of the Spirit, if that would be a part of who
we
were.
That would be a great thing.
That would make such a positive impact. Yeah. Well, Stan, thank you for joining us. Our time is up here. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for the difference you've made in this church. And thank you for your thoughts today as well. Thanks for joining us.
It has been my privilege, Roy. Lord bless you guys and bless the church and its ministries to go forward.
All right. And we will sign off with everybody who's listening today. Join us next time. And thanks for tuning in today. Thanks for joining us for the Washington Heights Weekly Podcast. A new podcast will post every Monday. We encourage you to check it out, subscribe to it as well. It'll come into your feed automatically. And if you want to share that with somebody that you know that maybe wants to find out a little bit more about Washington Heights, go ahead and share that. And we look forward to hearing from you as well. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.